The show's live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. Today's program is the last in our series of shows this week on the Allerton Music Barn Festival at Allerton Park in Monticello. It's a project of the University of Illinois School of Music. And Saturday's concert is the one that so far we haven't covered, so we're going to do that today. It's called Pacifica Quartet and Friends. The Pacifica Quartet, of course, the string quartet in residence at the University of Illinois. They are embarked in a Shostakovich cycle of quartets, and they'll be playing one of those quartets on Saturday's concert. Also, there is a work for violin, piano, and string quartet. It's called a concerto or concert for violin, piano, and string quartet by Ernst Chausson. And we'll have later on in the show joining us the pianist for that performance, who is Timothy Allen of the U of I faculty. And the first part of the show will focus on the other piece on the program, which is a new work, in fact, commissioned for the Allerton Music Barn Festival. And it's by U of I composer, faculty member, Reynold Tharp. It's called Anima Liberata, and it will feature soprano Yvonne Redman and pianist Julie Gunn, and the librettist is with us also. We have composer, soprano, and librettist Joy Pierce Matthews. So we'll be kind of covering two significant aspects of that concert on today's program. It's live and local on FM 90.9.
In every heart there is a room, a sanctuary safe and strong, to heal the wounds from lovers past, until a new one comes along. I spoke to you in cautious tones. You answered me with no pretense, and still I feel I said too much. My silence is my self-defense, and every time I've held a rose, it seems I only felt the thorns. And so it goes, and so it goes, and so will you soon, I suppose. But if my silence made you leave, then that would be my worst mistake. So I will share this room with you, and you can have this heart to break. This is why my eyes are closed. It's just as well for all I've seen. And so it goes, and so it goes, and you're the only one who knows. Choose to be with you. That's if the choice were mine to make, but you can make decisions too, and have this heart to break. And so it goes, and so it goes, and you're the only one who knows.
At 8:30 in Monticello. And since I'm just hearing myself, I'm going to assume that you didn't hear anything I just said. We're having a little technical problem in our studio. And so I'm going to repeat what I just said, which is that the music you heard after an inordinately long pause, for which we apologize, was performed by baritone Nathan Gunn, called And So It Goes, a song by Billy Joel. It comes from his CD called Just Before Sunrise. Nathan and Julie Gunn and colleagues from the University of Illinois School of Music faculty opened the Allerton Music Barn Festival last night at Allerton Park in Monticello. And, this festival goes through Labor Day. There's a concert each night and also one Saturday morning, and we've been covering those all week long here on Live and Local. My name's Kevin Kelly, and today's show, we'll talk about Saturday evening's concert. It's called Pacifica Quartet and Friends. Pacifica playing the string quartet number 7 of Shostakovich. They'll also be joining violinist Stefan Milenkovich and pianist Timothy Allen for a concerto for those instruments by Ernst Chausson. And Tim Allen will be with us later in the show. And the second work on the program, at least I'm guessing it's in that order, is by a University of Illinois faculty composer named Reynold Tharp. And it is a piece that was actually commissioned for the Allerton Music Barn Festival. It's called Anima Liberata, and will feature soprano Yvonne Redman, and there is a libretto by Joy Pierce Matthews. All three of those folks are with us on the show today, and I thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And again, sorry to our listeners and to you guys for the delay. I'm not quite sure what happened, but I trust that people can hear us now. Tell us a little bit about what was the genesis of the piece? How did the commission happen, Reynold? And go from there.
I think it's really wonderful. Carl Kramer had the idea to start incorporating contemporary music into the already rich mix of things going on at Allerton. Jazz is already represented, and all music from Bach to the 20th century, and now we have some 21st century music as well. Carl Kramer initially approached me about this, saying he had some texts that he wanted set to music, and he had an idea for an instrumentation involving soprano, cello, and piano to feature three of my colleagues. And I jumped at the opportunity because it was a chance to write a really big piece for three wonderful musicians. And then I started talking to Joy, who's here with us today, about what she wanted to do with this piece. She had conceived this cycle of poems, and maybe you could talk a little bit about the poems and what you had in mind when you first gave them to me.
Right. I think the way we really started was I gave Reynold a couple of the poems I had finished. I did have the idea of a cycle. There are 9 Latin contemplations of life, and I originally wanted to write all 9 poems. And I think after you and I talked about the first couple, we decided I should go ahead and finish the cycle, and that Reynold would pick some part of them to write, to compose to. And that's how we got started, I think.
Well, how did Carl get to know you? I mean, Reynold, you said that he had the poems in mind already.
Well, Carl and I have known each other for about 30 years. We played together at the Chautauqua Music Festival, and we've since, reconnected later in life, and he knew I was doing a lot of creative writing and had read some other things I had written and asked me if I was interested in writing something specifically for a commissioned work, and of course I was thrilled about that prospect and went to work on this cycle and gave him the beginning of what I had written to see if it was something he'd be aligned with. He was very happy with what I had started with. And then, of course, he said, let me share it with Reynold. And so we went from there.
And Reynold, I'm not sure, how long have you been here on the faculty?
This is actually going into my fifth year here.
Fifth year already. Wow. And did you know Carl before, or did he become acquainted with your music since you've been on the faculty?
Since I've
here?
Been here, yes.
And he obviously liked it well enough to think, well, maybe this is the guy to do this project. Or did he communicate with you why he thought maybe you were the right one?
No, it just kind of came out of the blue, and I was glad to do it.
Because there's certainly other composers here on the faculty that he could have asked, but I guess...
I'll just interrupt here. I think he had a good sense that the kind of things I was writing would fit well with Reynold's compositional style. And I think that's one of Carl's great talents, is that he's good at identifying that kind of thing in people and where they can do their best work, and he knows how to put folks together. So that's one of his gifts, I think, to the university and certainly to Allerton. And he's been good for a lot of artists and musicians that way. So.
Well, he's affected a lot of change at the School of Music and a lot of dynamism in different kinds of ways. So what would you say, Reynold, is your style, if you can even talk about it?
Well, it's a tricky question because as I worked on this piece, my style changed a little bit. I'm not sure my style changed, but I think for some of the things I wanted to do in this piece, I had to push myself in a slightly different direction. A lot of my more recent music has been very interested in harmony and texture and creating very complex textures with larger ensembles, like with the orchestra or large chamber ensembles. And in a piece like this, I knew the first thing that had to come across to a listener, hopefully, would be the text. That part of my job in doing this was to communicate the text to the audience. And so complex textures and things like that weren't going to work in this case, and I really had to change my thinking and think a lot more melodically and thinking a lot more about simplifying textures so that it was really clear what was going on most of the time. That said, I think this does have quite a bit in common with some aspects of my pieces from the recent past. I'm very strongly influenced by French music in a way, an interest in very colorful harmony, an interest in some other things as well. One of the things that I discovered as I was working on this piece was I was actually being influenced by the teaching I've been doing. I don't just teach composition in the School of Music. I also teach a lot of analysis classes. And the past 2 years, I've taught some really fun, interesting graduate seminars 2 years ago on Mahler, and this past year looking at early 20th century operas, Debussy, Strauss, Puccini. And some of the things that I had discovered from looking at those pieces in a lot of detail rubbed off on this piece, how to build hopefully a large-scale form, so this was not just a series of songs, but a kind of large piece that all fit together as a whole, and how to organize that, and how to work with combining the soprano part with the instruments, particularly with the cello part, who is treated throughout the piece really as a kind of second singer who doesn't sing words but has a lot of duets with Yvonne, and they go back and forth and interact.
And we should mention that the cellist, who I haven't mentioned so far, is Dmitry Kuzov, who's on the faculty also, and Did he just join last year, 2 years, do you remember?
I believe so.
This is his second year.
I think this is the beginning of his second year.
I lose track so easily. I've been here for 19 years, which I've really lost track of, you know, having come here for a master's degree myself and just never having left. Reynold, have you done much with voices before?
Yeah. I had in the distant past. I think it had been about 17 years since I'd last written a vocal piece.
Wow.
But early on, I used to work with it a lot.
So what did you find challenging about it, to come back to working with the voice? Aside from clearing out the textures.
Clearing out the textures was really thinking melodically, which was a challenge at first, and then I think I learned a lot from this piece that I can carry on and use in other pieces, that now when I go back to writing larger ensemble pieces, for example, I can still work with intricate textures, but I can also have hopefully some kind of longer melodic line or longer melodic sweep to it. And once I got into the swing of writing melodies, then the piece really fell into place pretty quickly.
Well, let me ask you about that just a little bit, because, you know, it's something that many people have sort of lumped, well, formerly 20th century composers, particularly later 20th century composers, into this generalization that, 20th century composers and now 21st century composers don't ever write melodies, which seems to be changing more with some composers. But, you know, there's a couple of pieces that you shared with me and that we're going to sample at least one of here in just a moment. I wouldn't say are devoid of melody, but they seem to be more coloristic.
And, yes.
Even more coloristic than gestural.
Yes, gesture is not something I tend to like in music. I find it kind of, you know, get your hands off my collar. but color, yes. And so one of the things I wanted to do in here was to find ways that normally we think of color in music related to harmony and related to the color, the timbres of the instruments, to try and extend that linearly through melody. And that was one of the advantages of having both the soprano and the cello, is they can color each other as they're singing. And often, I know it's a little tricky for Yvonne sometimes, but the cello will be playing almost what she's singing, but not quite, and they kind of fit together and form, you know, transform each other, hopefully. So that there is a lot of coloristic thinking in this, even though it is still, in this new piece, primarily melodic.
But you have to, I mean, even when you're thinking coloristically, there's I'm assuming that you have at some level the listener in mind for whom it's almost certainly much easier for one to hear, as you said, linearly, meaning that the melody generally goes in a, you can think of it in a, what is this, horizontal?
Horizontal, yeah.
Horizontal way. Left to right, if you're in America, as opposed to, you know, other sort of cultures. Do the color, you know, when you're writing coloristically, do you think of a linear progression of colors?
Yes, very definitely. I think of all my music, even the pieces that aren't as melodic, as linear in how they move through time. You start someplace, you go someplace, you might pause along the way, you might go some part of the span more quickly, but the idea of music moving forward, it has always been important to me. It starts someplace, it has some kind of goal. I just think now I have a new way of doing that.
Well, we've been doing a lot of talking and hearing nothing. So let's hear, I want to, when we're done with this, talk a little bit more with Joy and get Yvonne into this conversation to hear how you've dealt with the music you have been handed. This, as Reynolds said, is something older, so, and it's not vocal. It's from about 7 years ago. I'm not sure what we have queued up here. Mike Pritchard, our technical director, we're going to look at track 3 on the CD. This is a piece for chamber orchestra called Cold Horizon, and this is very much of the coloristic variety. We're hearing the University of California, Berkeley Symphony Orchestra. David Milnes is the conductor, and again, it's from 2003. It's music by Reynold Tharp here on Live and Local. It was applause for a piece called Cold Horizon by Reynold Tharp, who is on the University of Illinois Composition and Theory faculty here in Urbana-Champaign. And Reynold Tharp is with us on the show today. The performance given by the UC Berkeley Symphony, David Milnes conducting, and that's from 2003. And as we said in introducing it, a little different, maybe a lot different from the piece that he wrote for tomorrow night's concert at the Allerton Music Barn Festival, which will feature soprano Yvonne Redman, who is with us, and the libretto by Joy Pierce Matthews. And we will continue that conversation in a matter of moments. First, let me mention that on Live and Local today, we have support for our show from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. So that's what we, if you didn't quite know what we had in mind by coloristic, I guess you could say that there was a lot of color in that. There's lots of different types of sounds, splashes of sound, some occasional violent splashes of sound, and together a melody of sorts, I guess. But it was a wonderful performance. I really enjoyed the piece, Reynolds.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks for sharing it with us. I hope our listeners did as well. So, Yvonne, as the person who gets to do the first and therefore definitive interpretation of this piece, of Reynolds' music and Joy's text, tell me your experience so far. I mean, we can only talk about it because it hasn't been performed yet, so there's no recording.
Yet.
And yeah,
hopefully we'll get to hear some of that on the radio. But yeah, it's always a pleasure to work with someone who is here and says to you, tell me a little bit about what works for you. And because with vocalists, as we all know, there's only one instrument of each of us. There's only one Yvonne instrument. There's only one Luciano Pavarotti instrument. There's only one Placido Domingo instrument. So, and yes, they're all basically lumped into categories, but they're all extremely individual, and they have their own gifts and also difficulties. And so Reynold was very kind to ask me about what kind of vocalism I like to do. And I enjoy being able to get text across in a very horizontal way, letting it grow, blossom, and then pull back. I tend to like long lines. My voice tends to work better, I think, in long lines. And so, honestly, when I got the piece of music, there wasn't one single note I would have changed.
Which is kind of impressive.
I thought maybe he was just doing everything that I requested. And so I was very honored by that, by his very kind, his thoughtfulness about my abilities. So I very much appreciated that. So in that way, I couldn't wait to dive into the piece. It felt like it had a part of me in it, something I could identify with. And then Joy's words, of course, helped, were very complimentary to, well, they complimented each other. It's this old argument, you know, words are music, what comes first, and they really complimented each other. And so it was easy to feel, I'm not sure exactly how Joy would describe what her poems are about, but for me, it was about how life is full of disappointments, but that it's worth getting through those moments and keep going, because there are a lot of blessings that we have in spite of them. And the one phrase of her text, it was a very, I'm always interested when I learn a new piece of music, what is the first thing that sticks in your brain the next day and your brain just keeps reviewing it? And it was this one phrase, and the things that you cannot foresee unfold with or without meaning, despite our pleas, we plead to understand, why is this happening? And there's not always an answer, and we have to accept that and move on. And I like where that is musically, and I like those words. So it's truly an honor to be able to work on a brand new piece and create it, to do something with it, and not have to have this history of, well, so-and-so did it that way, right, and so-and-so did it this way. So there's a very much a freedom in that.
You said you weren't sure how Joy would characterize her music, but since she's here, her text, but since you're here, before I ask you to do that, and then I'd actually like someone to read some of it, you know, so that we have a little better idea of maybe one of the poems, or I don't know how long they might be, but Joy, you're actually among other things, you're a medical writer.
I am. I came to that a little bit later in life. I studied cello very seriously. I went to the Cleveland Institute of Music and Juilliard after that, and played professionally for a number of years. But I grew up with a college English professor, so words and reading were a big part of my upbringing. And I always loved to write. I wrote a lot of poetry and all kinds of different things as a child, and sort of kept it up over the years. Wrote program notes, that kind of stuff, as I worked as a cellist and taught. And then when my son was about 5 years old, I had some personal things going on in my life that made me a little concerned about my future as a cellist. And I had always had this interest in writing, and started to do some more technical writing, kind of low-level science at the start, but then I found I really liked the science medical part of what I was doing, and so got some more education and more experience and got really very involved in medical writing at the journal level. And so that was just kind of a fluke in a way that my writing took me in that direction. It's not something I could have ever predicted would happen, but the nice thing for me, I think about words and music, or what works for me, I think, is that they're very similar. It's a very similar discipline. Music and writing are both intellectual disciplines that require a lot of familiarity with patterns and practice with patterns and order and organization, which, you know, as a cellist is a big part of your training and was a big part of my training. And so I think this, however I'm working with words, whether it's writing something, you know, scientific or something creative, what appeals to me is the same kinds of things that appeal to me as a cellist and as a musician, and probably why I liked studying music even as a child. There's probably something, you know, I assume that's just part of my personality that draws me in that direction. So in some ways, although it would seem like a very odd turn, I think it's actually makes a lot of sense when I kind of started to think about what aspects of each career were really overlapped in many ways. So.
The texts are in Latin, and the title Anima Liberata. Why Latin, and what does that title mean literally, and why that title, and how are they contemplations of life?
Well, the Latin contemplations were just something I came upon that already exist, and I thought it was a kind of a nice backdrop for creating a cycle of work. Anima Liberata means the liberated soul, and I'm very interested in Eastern philosophy and wanted to pursue these ideas of, you know, to live, to see, to triumph, to despair, from the perspective of, or I guess my perspective on a Taoist philosophy. And yes, Yvonne was actually, you were right, very right about that particular phrase you read. These poems, I think, are about accepting what is, good or bad, and also knowing that as human beings we're very eager to, are naturally driven to wanting things a certain way, or trying to make things happen a certain way in life, but that things are going to happen regardless, to some degree, of what we do. And at a point, if you can sit back and accept what is, there's a lot of comfort in that, at least for me personally. And so, yes, you were. That was interesting to hear your
It was amazing. That's the phrase that the first day after I started to learn the piece, that night as I'm going to bed, I hear a melody and some words spinning through my head, and those were the words.
Well, you are the interpreter after all, so
yes,
what you ultimately have to say about it matters almost more than what Joy has to say about it. I mean, when you come right down to it, because Joy's not going to be there for most of the performances.
Well, it'll certainly influence, what Yvonne does will certainly influence what the way the audience or the way
That's
people
right.
hear it. So, yeah.
Well, so maybe we should have, in that case, Yvonne read something. Take your pick.
I think we all three agree on this one. Grasping at the sum of passing days, slipped beyond unconscious embrace. No more a demise than swift, precious evolution. The infinite consumes.
And she went through three pages of music, I noticed, as you were paging through there. Now, not having heard this music or seen this music, can I assume from that there are a lot of notes per syllable? Or is there just...
It's really recitative-like in this particular section.
So the dialogue between the voice and the cello comes into play in this case.
Well, actually, it's just voice and cello in this movement.
In that moment.
And it's coming after what's probably the emotional climax of the piece. The poem just before this is the To Love poem. And after that one, there's a meditation on that poem after Yvonne stops singing. This is where Dimitri has his big solo that kind of continues the thoughts through this moment. And then it opens up into this very static moment, which accounts for, I guess, the three pages of this, where the cello is actually just playing a very simple drone, and then Yvonne sings this slow-moving melody on top of that. So it's this kind of moment of resolution within the piece after the turmoil that's happened just before that then sets up the move to the end of the entire cycle.
Was that slow-moving melody or slow, comma, moving melody?
It's a slow-moving melody, really. It's one of these long lines
that I wanted
to write for her.
Oh, slow, okay.
I should mention one of the things that was very useful was right before I started working on this piece, I heard Yvonne sing this wonderful solo in the last movement of Mahler's Fourth Symphony, and that was kind of the memory I had in my head of her voice as I was writing this.
Where did I miss that? When did you do that?
That last year with the UI Symphony with Donald Schleicher conducting.
How did I miss they did the Mahler 4?
Well, we did it. I can't remember what month we did it.
Very early in the semester.
I believe it was in February. The students did an amazing
job. I'm sure they did.
And Don is a fantastic conductor, easy to follow and musical. And we had a wonderful time putting it together.
Well, Reynold, you said very early on, and when I asked you to do your best at characterizing your music, you said that you had a certain amount of influence from some French, did you say impressionistic sounds or just a number of French composers?
I suppose, I mean, there's a long tradition, hopefully dead, of dividing composers into French versus German. But in that old tradition, I would fall somewhat more on the French side, I would guess.
Of the colorists.
Of the coloristic side.
Yeah.
And also, Yvonne just mentioned some of the aspects of text setting in this piece as well.
It reminded me very much, this is the first time we talked about it, but as I was learning it, I was relating it to just what I'm familiar with, which is opera, and it reminded me of Debussy's Pelléas and Mélisande. And so if your listeners are familiar with that opera, these pieces are very similar to that style and delivery of text, vocalism.
Well, I don't know if it was quite planned this way for this reason, but as it happens, there is a French work that will close the concert. And I will remind listeners that this is Live and Local, and we're talking about Saturday night's concert at the Allerton Music Barn Festival. It's called Pacifica Quartet and Friends, although we don't have the quartet with us on today's show. They'll be doing not only one of Shostakovich's string quartets, which I believe they're doing during the course of this season, playing all of them in this area and elsewhere. but they'll also be participating in this concert or concerto by Chausson for violin, piano, and string quartet. And the pianist for that performance is with us, Timothy Allen, and we'll hear from Tim in just a moment. I want to alert Mike Pritchard that, Mike, I think we're going to skip the Shostakovich and go straight to the Chausson CD that I gave you. So we'll do that in just a moment. Our programs today on FM 90.9 are made possible with support from Lincoln Square in Urbana, a lifestyle center which includes unique and independently owned specialty shops, including Dina's Hallmark and International Galleries. I'm going to take just a few minutes as Mike cues that up to mention a number of other performances going on in our area, because that's a big part of what we try to do here on the station. We've mentioned the Allerton Festival, so I won't mention further about that. The Prairie Dogs are playing tonight at 5 o'clock at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana. Country Gentlemen are at Kickapoo Landing in Oakwood tonight at 5:30. There's live jazz, as there often is, at Jim Gould Restaurant downtown Champaign tonight at 7 o'clock. It's a folk Americana show called the Rust Belt Road Show at the Clark Bar in Champaign tonight at 7. The Country Bluegrass and Gospel Jam is at the Community Center in Findlay tonight at 7 o'clock. A group called Left Turn Clyde, don't know anything more about that, is at the Gill Street Pub in Bloomington Normal at 6 o'clock tonight. A pre-Labor Day outdoor blues concert put on at the Untouchables Motorcycle Club House in Danville is tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. The Jeff Helgeson Quartet plays jazz at Alto Vineyards in Champaign tomorrow night at 7:30. The Brian Chobin Quintet plays jazz at Connie Link Outdoor Amphitheater in Bloomington Normal tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. The Illinois Symphony plays at Miller Park Theater in Bloomington Sunday night at 6:30. Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra gives a pre-Labor Day concert Sunday evening at 7:15 at Dodds Park at Parkland College. Gary Warnick Jazz Trio is at Long Creek Vineyards in Decatur Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. On Labor Day, the Decatur Municipal Band plays in Decatur during the Labor Day Parade, at 10 o'clock Monday morning. And the Milliken Decatur Symphony Orchestra gives a Labor Day concert at Nelson Park Amphitheater in Decatur Monday night at 6 o'clock. We've talked a lot. We'll hear from Tim Allen in just a moment, but let's hear a movement from the Chausson Concert or Concerto for Violin, String Quartet, and Piano here on Live and Local. So that was the second movement, the Sicilienne from the Concerto for Piano, Violin, and String Quartet by Ernest Chausson. The violinist in this performance was Joshua Bell, the pianist Jean-Yves Thibaudet, and the Takacs Quartet in the performance that you'll hear of the complete work Saturday evening at the Allerton Music Barn Festival. Will be violinist Stefan Milenkovic, pianist Timothy Allen, and the Pacifica Quartet, and Tim Allen is with us right now to talk about this. I know you said, Tim, in an email yesterday, I guess, that since you've just learned the piece for this performance, you know, you don't know how much you'll be able authoritatively to say about the piece, except as we're listening to that, we're commenting that authoritatively you can say there's a lot of notes to play.
There are a lot of notes. There's also a lot of melodic material in all the parts. So it's a rather dense piece. But I think the main thing that's interesting about it is there's the solo violin in addition to the piano quintet arrangement, which it seems that Chausson is essentially very ambitious in this work. He's trying to create a piece that follows the great works of Schumann and Dvorak and Brahms and Franck, who was his teacher. So it's a long piece. It's four movements. It's very serious, but it also has a wide range of emotional qualities. And as I was saying, it's quite dense. In other words, he tries to throw in a lot of melodic activity in all the parts, sometimes all at once. So it's hard to know even which part is the main part. And it's true that in the piano writing, he tends to favor very busy, active pattern kind of, or arpeggiation up and down the keyboard. So it makes a very colorful impression overall, but it is quite challenging.
Not a bad follow-up to the piece of Reynold Tharp's that we heard earlier, the orchestral piece that had lots of colors, and don't want to make that too much of the theme of the conversation today, but you know, you said there are lots of melodies going on at once, and I was going to ask you anyway, it's billed as a concerto for these groups, but is it really a concerto for any soloist or just all six instruments at different times?
I think mainly the latter, although there are sections where the solo violin is the dominant activity. In other words, or for example, the piece opens with right near the beginning a very large violin solo with very busy arpeggiation accompanying that. So there are moments also in the last movement where the solo violin is just together with the piano. So it's an interesting combination of using all players together sometimes and then once in a while just featuring the piano and violin.
Well, it's a piece I've never had a chance to hear. I'm not even sure I've ever heard the whole thing anyway. I mean, I knew we had this recording here and I've heard parts of it, but I'm pretty sure I've never heard the whole piece. So I know I'm really looking forward to hearing the concert Saturday evening. What's been the experience of putting it together with the other players? I mean, has it been sort of typical with these concerts where you get to rehearse it a couple of times and then you perform it?
Yeah, it's... luckily, the Pacifica Quartet has played this in the past. So, and they're in the middle of recording currently a lot of Shostakovich, I believe. So, we need to do this on one rehearsal. One working rehearsal. I think we'll have a chance to play it through today also. Yeah. But we did rehearse it yesterday, and it's in terms of putting it all together. It's not incredibly difficult as an ensemble challenge. I mean, it's pretty clear where the beat should be anyway. So in that sense, it's difficult to play the parts, but I think it's the main part is not necessarily.
But then making it coherent with so many things going on at one time, I mean, it's one thing to put everything in the right beats.
Right.
But then.
What do you listen to exactly?
What do you listen to? How do you make ultimate sense of it?
Right.
And so on.
Right.
Will you have time to figure that out?
Well, I hope so, to some extent. I hope.
Well, I mean, beyond the beats, what do you think is the challenge of putting something like this together that seems so complex in such a short period of time?
Well, I mean, it's a matter of understanding the spirit of the music. Also, you know, what is the character of this or that section, and what. You know, how should the phrasing develop? How are the tempos and directions of the lines concentrated in different places at different times? So I think, knowing that we do have limited rehearsal time, it's up to everybody to study the score very carefully and try to plan ahead.
So you better know your own part really well, and then otherwise use your intuitive musicianship to. And yeah, you've heard recordings of others. You know, Yvonne mentioned earlier that there may be an advantage to the piece she's doing of Reynolds and Joy's that there was no precedent. But in this case, maybe that's an advantage to having a precedent where you can at least have experienced what somebody else made it sound like.
Right. Yeah, I don't look at that as a burden at all. It's very helpful to hear what other players have done in a piece like this. It might be a little more intimidating if it were a first performance. In fact, I heard that at the first performance, the premiere of this, the pianist in particular defected and said his part was unplayable. I'm not sure.
During the performance?
Well, let's hope not during the performance.
You just figured that out during the performance.
I'm not quite sure what happened as a result of that, whether they had to ask another pianist or if he somehow managed to get through it. But
well, that seems to be what inevitably happens, because there's other stories, you know, like the Barber Violin Concerto. I remember that's being said of that, where the first violinist who was written for said, like, this is unplayable. And, of course, mm-hmm. somebody manages to play it. And now everybody plays it.
Right, yeah.
You know, and, well, you guys, you played... Tim, you played with Pacifica last year, the Dvorak Quintet on the Nellerton Barn Concert. And I was at that concert. I thought you especially just played fabulously.
Oh,
and I'm sorry to say that was the first I'd had a chance to actually hear you. Oh. You and I had a conversation some time ago for a second Sunday concert that WILO put on. Mm-hmm. And I was really impressed. And so I'm all the more looking forward to hearing this performance on Saturday night.
Yeah. Thank you.
Which is, by the way, sold out. But it's maybe worth still calling the number, which I didn't bring. You could probably call the Krannert Center because tickets do sometimes get turned in. So try 217. I'm blanking on the Krannert Center.
The website.
Anyway, go to the website, find the phone number, and give a call if you want to try to get a seat. Well, I thank all of you for coming in. Tim and Reynold and Joy and Yvonne had to take off. And we're going to go out on just a little bit of the last movement of the Chausson Concerto, which will be played in its entirety on Saturday. You are listening to Illinois Public Media, WYLFM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. This Saturday's Labor Day weekend tasting features a variety of reds and whites, including Skyleaf and a Zinfandel from the White Gorilla. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. We'll take Labor Day off and be back with a new show on Tuesday. Have a great weekend.